edge of life and death can be a loud place. An electronic chorus listened to them of machines, monitors, and alarms, telling all about a life veering closer to or away from the edge. There are intensive care units in medical facilities all over the world, but in a sense, they are all the very same place, a narrow corridor of life and death. Critical care nurse James Kelly calls the ICU a place where night is day. It's the title of his book, chronicling the experience of the humanity and the curious contradictions in the ICU at Lovelace Women's Hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I think the ICU almost, it's kind of a paradox. It's almost like too much too late. I think people who come to the ICU, it's almost, even though it's a closed world, it's kind of a window, I think, to the larger world of healthcare in our society. And what we see sometimes, I feel in my experience, even though it's a dramatic area of great heroism and high technology and a marriage of science and medicine, it's also the failure of healthcare, because we see people who come in there and we see them, the problems of lack of access and lack of insurance. And they come in, they wait too long to come in, they don't have their medication. So when they come in, they're far sicker than they would have been if they had appropriate care. So even though I think it's a place where we do save lives, for all its heroism, in many ways it's a poor allocation of our resources, I think, as a society.
The title of your book is Where Night is Day, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the sounds in the ICU in those moments at night where everybody is sort of beeping away, and at the nurse's station you're sort of watching people in this netherworld, almost between life and death.
Right. Well, I actually wrote that sentence, I began the book in 1999, actually, and I wrote that sentence very early in my career. I wrote that there's no night in the ICU, there's day, lesser day, then day again, because in a way, disease doesn't sleep. And even though it might take a little bit of a slight subduing, it's ongoing all night long. And even though, I mean, nighttime, we have codes, we have admissions, and the alarms are always going off. And so there's a constant sort of like activity in the ICU day and night. But the feeling is that at any moment, anything could happen. I say in the book that I describe it as 11 hours of boredom and 1 hour of terror. Well, that feeling of that terror could burst out at any moment is always there in the ICU.
And then there are moments like this that are neither terror nor boredom, but are very, very human. Here's you interacting or writing about interacting with a patient by the name of Bernard Fleischer. I'm going to give you some Ativan, you tell him. Help you relax. Trying to bridge him to the other side, to shore. I know he trusts me. I've taken care of him 6-7 times. It's as if you were on a ship that was sinking and you were way below deck and you were trying to get out and had to walk down dark corridors and up dark stairs. And there was a person who you felt knew the way. You would gently hold on to that person's sleeve or the back of his shirt so lightly he would hardly feel it. I feel his hand on me like that. I stand by the side of the bed. Everyone is quiet. His heart rate comes down. His breathing steadies. Everyone sits. You're this guide in a dark corridor between life and death. That's so beautifully written.
Oh, thank you. And read as well. Thank you very much. Yes, I think about nursing. In the book, one of my themes is how close we are to illness. I think nursing has a very unique proximity to illness. And I was just trying to sort of convey that in the book. With that man, he was there for several weeks, actually. He left the ICU and came back a few times. And this is almost our last attempt to sort of like almost keep him alive, because he decided not to be reintubated. And I was like, I felt he trusted me. And I felt that trust that we had together between us was instrumental in giving him the faith that he could walk across that bridge to the shore and survive.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, my mother spent many weeks in an ICU years ago. She made a complete full recovery, but while she was there, she was intubated. She had all kinds of problems, respiratory problems, circulatory problems, you know, liver going up and down, kidneys going up and down kind of thing. And the color of her skin and her look and the swelling and the aggressiveness of the technology,
right.
She didn't look human much of the time. How do you deal with that?
You know, as a nurse, I get asked that a lot. They say, how does it affect you? And I say, I couldn't be a nurse. I couldn't stand that. But actually, and I thought a lot about this, it doesn't really affect me. And I don't mean to sound that I'm callous or inured to that. But I think I think nurses in critical care really have we share with physicians that detachment and objectivity that is required to do the job. And I think also as well that time is everything in the ICU. If you have a heart attack, we say time is muscle. If you have a stroke, we say time is brain. So time is everything. We're always aware that we have to sort of diagnose them and treat them as soon as possible because there's a tipping point. You can stay too long. People do become grotesquely deformed in the ICU. I mean, the therapies we do, we give them so much fluid on ventilators and we push breath into them and everything, and their bodies become misshapen. I know that sometimes someone will come to me and say, I'm here to see so-and-so in room 228. And I say, well, he's over there. And they'll come back and say, well, that's not him. It must be another room. I say, no, that's him. And they're stunned by the look. I think the layperson, I think, is really stunned by it. But from a nursing perspective, we don't have that kind of reaction to it. I think it's part of like doing the job, but not being callous, though.
It's partly detachment. It's also an awareness of what the body can take in terms of being a bag full of fluids or air or whatever you want.
That's right. Yeah, the body can really take a lot. And we give them very powerful drugs that affect their circulation, and they do. You are amazed, in a sense, by the human capacity, like physiologically, to withstand the interventions. Like, what we do now in critical care, the interventions are so complex and so powerful. We have much more powerful drugs, and we paralyze people all the time to help them oxygenate. And I think that you do appreciate the strength of the human body, but also the human spirit as well. I mean, I think that in the same fashion, the human spirit, even the patient who is like unconscious and sedated, you can feel how much they're fighting to live. I mean, even their body is going through all these changes, and their emotions and soul are also are fighting as well.
What's it like to turn off the machines when either care is withdrawn in some cases, as is the case with certain families make a decision, or to turn all those machines off after someone has died?
Well, it's a profound feeling, and it is really amazing. I don't know. I just like most people in the ICU who die, they die by the withdrawal of support. And we don't have very many codes because we know we're so on top of what's going on that we don't, nothing really unexpected happens that often. And the moment of withdrawal is very poignant. It's probably the most human moment you can ever experience in the world. I mean, we work very closely with the families, and we talk with them and we reach a decision. And when we reach that decision, we make the room ready, and we usually ask them to leave. And sometimes what we'll do is extubate them first. Sometimes we'll clean them up a little bit, put their arms on pillows, have them come in, and the person will be alive for that moment, usually. And then we'll give them medication for comfort. And it's an experience hard to describe. One thing I've learned, I think there's kind of a myth that people deny death or they're afraid of death. What I've seen in my career is that how much families, the patients, how much they understand death. And when it comes, they accept it. So it's a feeling of like of completion and gratitude sometimes.
Well, it's a remarkable portrait of a place in the hospital, the intensive care unit, but also a place in what is perhaps a place for all of our lives. James Kelly, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
James Kelly is the author of Where Night is Day, The World of the ICU.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.